You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Bill Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues, and like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, I tell you, this show has had a blessing of kind of coming along, you know, in the last year and a half and being able to get some amazing guests on to bring. I always tell you, folks, we're going to do everything we can to do what I call the four E's. We're going to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain you with what it means to be a conservative, a Christian in today's world. And so all that to say, our next guest is somebody who I have admired from afar for many years. Singer-songwriter Stephen Curtis Chapman. He's one of those pioneers of Christian music who has made it cool to be a Christian in today's world. And he is starting with his first album, which I believe was called First Hand in 1987. He has spanned the years. You get albums like The Great Adventure, Heaven in the Real World, Speechless, his most recent one this year released is Still. Multiple Grammys, GMA Awards. Stephen Curtis Chapman, thanks for joining us on Right Side Radio.
Absolutely. Great to be with you, brother.
Well, thank you. And I got to tell you, by the way, I'm pretty sure that it was not my wife and I getting our kids out of the bed in the morning. It was The Great Adventure. If my son asked for, I mean, every single day, Daddy, can you play Saddle Up Their Horses? Yes. And we would play it again, and they'd be up for the day going to school. That was our intro to the day for years.
I'm glad to know I was able to, help a family get the day going. It's so funny that song in particular, I've had so many great stories of people, man, that was our summer, camp theme song, and they knew the dance moves. This was our family's, theme song going to the mission field. I've heard that. I've had people say, like that, getting us up going in the morning for this whole season of life. One of my favorites is a guy came up to me one day and he said, he was a young guy, and I was kind of surprised. He's like, man, Stephen Curtis Chapman, I can't, so cool to meet you. And he's like, you know what your music means to me? There's like one word comes to mind when I hear your music, especially The Great Adventure. And I'm thinking, wow, this seems like it's going to be really powerful. And he says, pancakes, man, pancakes. And I'm like, okay, all right, tell me about that. And he said, dude, every Saturday morning, man, when I was 8 years old, if I heard The Great Adventure come on, that meant mama's in the kitchen making some pancakes. It was a good day. So I'm like, hey, I'm just here to be a blessing however I can.
Well, musics and smells, those two things tie up memories more than anything else. You can evoke a memory quick with either a song from your childhood or a smell from your childhood. And man, it'll resonate. And one more quick anecdote. My daughter, when she was three, our family went to see you in concert. I believe you were in Birmingham. And we went to see you in concert. She fell asleep during intermission because she was three. So I'm sitting there holding her, my wife's holding her, one of us. Anyway, she's sound asleep. You came back on stage. Whatever you were playing kicked on. And with her eyes still closed, she started dancing. And, the audience can't see me because we're on radio, but she's literally starting to dance in my wife's arms with her eyes closed and then slowly woke up with her hands. She was going at it. But anyway.
That's amazing. Just getting it even while she's kind of still snoozing.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, thank you for letting me be a part of your family's life. What a cool thing. What a humbling privilege. I hear that story a lot, and I never want to, forget to just stop and say what a gift that was and is and has been to be woven into so many families' stories and lives and journeys, faith journey and all of that. So that's so cool. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And so let me ask you this. If I recall correctly, your dad was either a guitar teacher or a guitar maker, and you and your brother, I think, started playing early on. How'd you get into being a recording artist? I mean, where did this come from?
My dad was and is a great guitar player, singer, songwriter. When I was a little bitty guy, I remember him with his buddies. He played in a group there in Western Kentucky. They were pretty well known around Western Kentucky and surrounding states. And they would do concerts and they played every Saturday night at a place near the Land Between the Lakes, which is an area where I grew up, Kentucky Lake and Barkley Lake and all of that. And so my earliest memories are music memories, my dad playing music with his buddies, because I was so intrigued by it. I love the sounds, bluegrass especially. That's the kind of music, folk and bluegrass and country music, upright bass, guitar. My dad played guitar. They had banjos and fiddles and, you know, all of that stuff. So those were the sounds that kind of, that I remember, you know, coming alive to when I was a little boy. And then watching my dad write songs, be such a great musician, watching him perform, I always, you know, just was enamored with that and fascinated with it. So he started a little music store when I was probably 5 or 6 years old called Chapman Music. Originally was in Mayfield, Kentucky, which is now everybody knows the name Mayfield because of the tornado a few years ago, couple of years ago, that devastated the whole town. And my dad's music store was there right outside of Paducah, Kentucky. Eventually he moved it back to our hometown of Paducah, and it's still there. I'm happy to report my dad is 83 years old and he still teaches guitar lessons five days a week. Pretty great. Just, he's such a great man and great inspiration for me and so many others. He's taught so many people music, but more than that, his music store's kind of been a little, it's kind of been like a little counseling, inspiring center. I mean, he's led a lot of people to faith in Jesus. He's shared his, you know, faith with a lot of people. He's just cheered a lot of people on in their hard times and all of that. So it's been a really cool thing. I think in a way my dad had this amazing ministry, even though he never really called it that all these years. It was just his little music store and his guitar studio. But as a result of being around that, as a kid, I started playing guitar when I was 6 years old. He taught me Folsom Prison Blues was the first song I learned on the guitar. And from there, you know, we started to sing together. He'd grown up in a faith environment, but he didn't have a father. His dad had left home when he was about 3 years old. Alcohol sadly destroyed his relationship with his family. Eventually it destroyed his father's life. By the time my dad was 9, his father passed away. So he had grown up without a dad, and so music was his pursuit. But when I was about 7 years old, my mom and dad and my older brother all really committed their lives to a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that was really the beginning of a massive kind of seismic shift in my family. And we began to sing together. And my dad's pursuit of music in country, and he wanted to be on the Grand Ole Opry someday, but he laid that dream down because he didn't want to be gone on the weekends. Now he really wanted to be there for his family. He wanted to be a dad who was present for his two sons, unlike his dad was for him and his brother. And so thankfully he did that. We were together in church and we were together singing and started singing in church. I came to faith personally when I was 8 years old at this same little church, Olivet Baptist Church there in Paducah. And so we started learning, you know, Bill Gaither songs and singing those in church together and around town. My brother and I started to be a little duo, the Chapman Brothers, that kind of got known around Paducah, and everybody wanted us to come sing, you know, at their whatever different gatherings or talent shows or whatnot. And I started writing songs in high school. And so I got to college. My dad told me to go get a real job because it's hard to feed a family playing a guitar, and because he had done that for a life. And he said, it's not as easy as you might think. And he said, so go get a real job. You got a smart brain. I didn't get an education. You got a chance to get an education. So I went and I was a pre-med major for one very long, painful, awful semester because I didn't belong in that. Saw the light.
Boy, was operating outside his gifts at that point.
Yes, absolutely. Big time. And somehow a little cassette tape, if you remember what those were, some of you will, that I had made of some songs I'd written, found its way into the hands. And this was God's plan and God's, you know, as only God could orchestrate, into the hands of none other than Bill Gaither himself, the guy who wrote the songs I grew up singing with my family. And got a phone call from Bill Gaither who said, hey, I think you've got a gift. I think these songs are pretty good start, and I'd love to mentor you and just encourage you in this gift. And even let's talk about publishing. Let me publish some of your songs if you're open to that. And I'm like,
and your first break was in songwriting, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it. So I started writing songs for other people, and I had songs recorded by Sandy Patty and Glenn Campbell and the Imperials and a lot of other people before I ever made my first record, which was 1987, as you referenced earlier, firsthand, 35 years ago. And that's been my journey. It's been an amazing, amazing story and incredible adventure.
Well, and it has maybe the great adventure, but
you could call it that.
Boomer, how are we doing on time, bud? What we got? About a minute and a half? All right. So let me ask you this. With about a minute and a half before we go to the first break, your dad's musical influence on your life and, of course, the Lord's influence on your life, has your dad ever performed on stage with you since you became a recording artist? Has he ever come on stage and you just picked and grinned together?
So my dad's dream was to be on the Grand Ole Opry, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
He laid that dream down so he could be a dad, so he could be with his family, so we could sing together growing up. So about 5 years ago, I made an album called, it was a bluegrass album, paying homage to the music I grew up loving so much. And I called my dad. He sang on the album with me and
played guitar
on it. It's amazing. It's my favorite record because it's got my dad, it's got my brother on it with me. And I called him and I said, Dad, I want you to come to Nashville. I'm going to release this album and we're going to do a big performance to kind of announce the releasing of it. So he came and at about, I think he was 80 years old. I said, introduced my dad and he walked out on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh.
And we sang together on the Opry with Ricky Skaggs and my brother and my dad and my son. So talking about a cool moment, man, I was, you know, pretty much a puddle the whole time because I was just crying and it was beautiful. It was such a cool, and that's just God, you know, that's God's word about, you know, if you delight yourself in him, he will give you the desires of your heart. Now that isn't a formula for, hey, God's gonna, you know, if I do good things, you know, and trust him, he's gonna give me all the good things I want. But that was just such a great moment.
What a great thing.
Seeing that come to fruition, that this dream that my dad had all these years later would come to fruition because he made a decision to honor God with his family and his life and his faith and his music.
Wow. All right. Well, tell you what, Stephen, we got to take our first break right now. Let's do that real quick. And folks, you're listening to an interview right now with singer-songwriter, Christian recording artist, Stephen Curtis Chapman, with a legacy that goes beyond most folks who've ever had a chance to sing and play in front of anyone. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. All right, we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right. Enjoying some time right now with Stephen Curtis Chapman, a singer-songwriter, Christian music recording artist. Been doing this since 1987. I guess, hey, Stephen, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, you've had what I would call an enduring career. I mean, not everybody, they come and go. I mean, in your industry, whether it be Christian or secular, you see them, they come on. Sometimes they even have a phrase called one-hit wonders. But you've been around, you've kind of endured, talk to us about that. How does that happen? And of course, I guess the first thing you can say is God, but nonetheless, talk to me about how you make a 30 some odd year career out of this.
Well, that is a really great question. And,
and if you figure it out, you'll tell me, right?
Yeah. If I knew the answer, I'd write the book and might sell, you know, at least a dozen copies, you know, to some people who would look and go, how does a hillbilly from Paducah, Kentucky, you know, ever end up, you know, on this kind of a journey? And I'm still more amazed than anybody and more just in awe of that and more grateful than anything, just because it is a crazy thing. You know, from the very beginning, when I did my first record, people would say when they'd hear my music, and I got to back up, you know, the reason I started as a songwriter, I didn't even feel like I had a strong enough voice to even be an artist per se, because I grew up in a family of golden pipes. My dad was a great singer. My brother was the singer. I was always his backup guy. I was the guy in the shadows kind of playing along. And yet I was the back, you know, I would kind of sing background vocals for him. But when he went away to college, that's kind of, I had no voice in front. So that's when I kind of had to dig up, you know, kind of up from my toes, what little voice I felt like I had. But it was really songwriting that gave me sort of my voice. That's where I found a sense of confidence enough to go, well, I think part of me jokingly, but I think there was a part of it was a reality that I thought, well, if I sing a song they never heard before, then they don't have anything to compare it to. So they won't know if it's good or bad. You know, they don't know if I'm doing it right or not. So I think that's part of what fueled my songwriting from the beginning. But I started, you know, writing songs. And I think at the very beginning, even though I didn't feel like I had this powerful voice that would make people stop and go, wow, what is that? I would hear people say, man, when you sing, I feel like those songs, I feel like you're my friend. I feel like you somehow know me. You know what's going on. And I relate to that. And so thank you. I feel like I know you and feel like you know me, even though we never met. And all these years later, when people hear my music still, they will say, man, your music has journeyed with me on my journey, my life, my family. And I've got songs that marked when I got married. My wife and I, you know, got married to your song, I Will Be Here. I danced with my daughter, you know, to your song, Cinderella, at a wedding.
Oh, my gosh.
You've just been a part of our family. You've been a part, you know, of our, with your music. And that, I guess, is if I could say anything as far as what has allowed me to endure all this time is that people have connected in that way through different seasons of life. And somehow, by God's grace, my music stayed relevant enough with people. I've worked at it. Yeah, I try to learn all I can and stay a student, change things up when I need to, but not also try to be something I'm not, go put on skinny jeans and try to pretend that I'm still really cool and young and hip and all that stuff, but just kind of go, here's where I am. Here's what's going on in my life. And again, by God's grace, it seems like it's connected with people still.
Well, it has. And we're about down to a minute for our next break, but I got to tell you, just referencing back real quick, my daughter, who I told you was 3 years old and fell asleep at the concert that time, she just got married a few weeks ago. And I was almost mad at you when the song Cinderella came out because it tore me up back in the day. And I told him there were a couple of songs we were not allowed to play at her wedding, and one of them was that.
You just banned it.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. That one and some Butterfly Kisses song, it was not going to happen.
Denial is your happy place. I got you. I feel you. Deny it even exists.
That's right. Boomer, what do we got, buddy? How are we doing on time? About time to roll it? All right, we'll do that. Listen, folks, we're going to take the hard break right now. Bottom of the hour, we got to do it. But let's come right back with Stephen Curtis Chapman. We're going to talk to him about what his family's been doing with an amazing ministry called Show Hope. I think it's going to warm your heart. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
River can be found, and like the rain, I have been carried here to where the river flows. Yeah. Saddle up your horses.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about we are down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville. We got from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And we are back right now with Stephen Curtis Chapman. Hey, Stephen, listen, I want to jump off of your actual singing career and talk about, I guess, the stewardship of some of God's callings on your life, one of which has been a ministry called Show Hope that you and your wife, Mary Beth, started some years back, 2009-ish, thereabouts?
Yes, sir. Well, probably officially right around 2000. Well, the story began with our own adoption journey, which starts probably, honestly, around late 1990s, around 1998. Our daughter, Emily, our oldest child, we have three biological children, Emily, Caleb, and Will Franklin. And Emily was about 11, took a trip with her mom to Haiti, came back having spent time with kids that didn't have a family, and it broke her heart.
Yeah.
She just said, "Mom, Dad, we got to do something about this. We need to adopt some children." Well, we had three kids at this point, and those who know our story and have heard me tell it over and over again, probably if they've seen me in concert, about how we just said, "That's a beautiful idea that you should do when you grow up and have your own house." Because there's no room, you know, we're done. We'd gotten rid of the high chairs and the car seats and all that stuff. And we weren't going back, but she said, "Well, I'm going to pray about this because I think God is telling me we should adopt, you know." So at 11
years
old,
adopt. Yeah,
it's like, okay, well, like I said, that's good for you. But as you know, as God loves to tell these stories, you know, in ways we never saw coming, it was actually our daughter that was very instrumental in just us beginning to pray about and consider, is this something God has for us? We adopted our daughter, Shohanna, then subsequently our daughter, Stevie Joy, and then our daughter, Maria. So we ended up adopting three girls at different times from China. And so in the process of that, we began to, right after we adopted Shoei, which was in March of 2000. So that's almost 23 years ago now, 22 years ago. We had so many families immediately, Christian families, that saw us, you know, we were very obviously public and vocal about our story.
Sure.
Sharing it wherever we had a chance, because we just, it was such an amazing experience for us. And we wanted other people to, you know, hear about it and know about it. And we had our eyes open to the needs of millions of children around the world, not just in China, but right here in the U.S., 500,000 in the foster care system, probably 130,000 of those able to be adopted right now, right in our backyard, but all around the world, millions of kids growing up without a mom and dad, without a family. It just broke our hearts as we had our eyes open to it. And partner that with people coming to us, Christian families, saying, "Gosh, we would love to adopt someday. We just can't afford it right now because it can be $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. That's just, there's no way we can afford that."
Yeah.
But we know God's going to provide at some point because we know He's called us to it. So we're ready whenever that comes. Well, you hear that message and you just walk through an orphanage where you know of hundreds of little ones specifically, but you know they're all over the world waiting for mom and dad and a family. You're thinking, all you need is some financial help. Are you kidding me? Well, come on, let's get this done. So my wife, who is definitely the fireball of the two of us, said, "We got to do this. I'm going to start helping these families." So she starts writing checks basically to help families that want to adopt. And I'm starting to see this long line of people forming, you know, to go and, "Hey, this is a great opportunity," but my wife's writing checks faster than I'm writing songs, basically. So we got to do something here. Yeah. So that's how we started Show Hope. Honestly, we started it just to help families. The mission is to engage the church, because we believe this is James 1:27, where God says very clearly to us, His followers, the church, that his definition of true religion is to care for orphans and widows in their distress. And so we see this as a great invitation, not God, you know, looking over his glasses, checking his clipboard, you know, with a scowl on his face saying, "Do this or you're in big trouble." But God saying, "Hey, I want you to experience me. This is how you're going to experience really what it means to be a follower of Jesus, to be a God follower. It's going to be when you do the things that I'm passionate about, and I want to take care of and care for these children, and I'm going to invite you into it." So all from a trip to Haiti. So we started helping families, and now after 20 years, give or take, it's almost been 20 years officially since we started Show Hope. We have been able to help almost, over 8,000 families now adopt kids from 63 countries by supporting them financially, also with just all kinds of encouragement, inspiration. We also now do some real specific work supporting families who bring children home with some very intense, complex needs emotionally, with abandonment, with, you know, there's early childhood trauma being in an institution. In an orphanage, they bring home some invisible baggage with them. And so we want to support that. So we do some great work in supporting families. Also medically, we do some great work to support families who have ongoing medical costs for children that they've adopted. And then we've got a student program that allows students to learn about the need of children in the world and just kind of inspire them, because this whole thing started in the heart of a student.
So. I got to tell you too, and that what a blessing that is, by the way, because adoption is a huge, if we're going to be pro-life as people, it's got to be pro-life even past the womb. And and what you're doing there is pro-life if you get down to it. But let me tell you too, my weird eclectic resume, having spent years in full-time ministry, but then I went into the practice of law. I'm an attorney. And I spent a number of years in our state legislature in Alabama. I still to this day tell folks that one of the coolest things I ever got a chance to do was to recognize that my friends, the May family, Nathan May sitting right here in the studio, Boomer, had adopted his sister Karina from Ukraine. And I did not realize that until then that Alabama had archaic laws on the books that made it much harder. You had to go through an entire readoption process, they called it, which was a second-level expense and all the hoops to jump through. And so as an attorney and a legislator, I personally wrote the law that we got passed with a complete bipartisan, 100% unanimous vote, House and Senate in Alabama, changed the law in Alabama to make it easier for foreign adoptions to occur, and we named it after Nate's sister. So it's called Karina's Law in Alabama.
Yeah. And, wow. So hey, thank you for that, Phil. Of all the things that great things that you've done, brother, that's one that's going to, the eternal significance of that, as you know, I mean, it's going to be amazing and is and will continue to be. So thank you for that.
Well, it's a blessing. We got about 4 minutes left, though. So talk to me about your family. I mean, the family's all involved. Show Hope is a family ministry as much as anything. It's not just you and your wife. I know your kids have of course, your daughter's the one who convinced you that adoption was what needed to happen anyway. And then as a part of it, and I know it's not there, it's not as active as it used to be, but you also had a house actually in China that was a very significant brick-and-mortar structure that was a part of the ministry too. We got about 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, Maria's Big House of Hope. So, yes, we have, as I mentioned, 6 kids, Emily, Caleb, Will, Franklin. Caleb and Will are guys that followed in Dad's footsteps. They're amazing musicians, have a band called Colony House. And they are touring. They're getting ready to release their 4th album, and they helped me produce this new album of mine. In fact, so they thankfully I got them to come work with me. They toured with me for about 5 years in my band, and just are really remarkable musicians. Caleb's an incredible songwriter and creator of all kinds of things, videos and songs and music and all of that. So real blessing to have them come back and work with me on my new music. Writing and producing some of it with me. And then, of course, Emily was at the helm of Show Hope up until about 6 months ago. She was our executive director for a period of 2 or 3 years and did an amazing job. But she came to us and said, you know what, my 3 little girls, our 3 granddaughters that are Emily's girls, are 10, 8, and 6. And she said, I just realized they're growing up so fast, and I want to be a mama and not, I'm afraid I'm going to blink my eyes and I'm going to do great work for Show Hope, which she was crushing it. But she said, I need to be mom right now.
Hard to argue with that.
So we were like, absolutely. But we have a staff of about 25 with Show Hope. Our daughter-in-law, actually my son, Caleb's wife, Julia, has been a part of the work of Show Hope for about 15 years now. And she's been one of our longest standing great employees in the finance department. So based here in Franklin. And then Shoey now is our Shohanna, the one that we adopted 23 almost years ago, is getting her degree in social work, her master's in social work at the University of Alabama, Roll Tide. That's why we love Alabama right now. And I know those are fighting words with you, Phil. I understand.
As an Auburn fan, I'm going to let that roll.
But she is spending a lot of her time in Birmingham, actually, at the Children's Hospital there, where she's working right now in a fellowship and part of her traineeship for her master's. And then Stevie Joy, her little sister, is a cheerleader for University of Alabama. She just cheered that game. They played a game this last Saturday.
It was nothing important.
And really cool. Nate and I were just talking about this. She just got chosen as a member of the USA team to go represent the United States in the world cheerleading, co-ed cheerleading competition this coming spring.
How
which is
that?
About as you know, top shelf as you can get in the world of cheerleading that she has entered into. So she's an incredible bright light. And then our youngest, Maria, is been with Jesus for almost, well, 13 years now.
Yeah.
It'll be 14 in May. She passed away a few days after her fifth birthday. And a lot of people know our story with that. And that's been a big part of our journey as well, and the grief and the just the tragedy of that. But God has been faithful and carried us as a family and continues to. And that building in China that you mentioned that still stands, we unfortunately in the last few years, as far as our work with Show Hope, particularly related to it, had to exit China. It's just things have changed so much there with our relationship. I was reading about China this morning. Things are intensifying there.
They really are.
And so we had to exit about 2019 after 10 years, but we were able to see help come to thousands of children that otherwise wouldn't have survived, many of them that were dying when they came into the care center that we got to care for. We know of almost 1,000 who were adopted into families around the U.S. We get to see them and meet them on an ongoing basis. So we know it was a work that God was in and honored our daughter and really still does. I mean, that work will go on for eternity. We just don't get to have the hands-on work that we did for 10 years there in China. But yeah, great work happening with Show Hope and amazing things going on with our family. We're just very grateful.
Well, I love the fact, and we're about to head to a break right now, but I love the fact that you've got a career. God has blessed you in the midst of it, and that you have used that as an opportunity then to do more for the kingdom, but your whole family's involved with it. That's just very cool. All right, I'll tell you what, Boomer, let's take it to the break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back, wrap up our time with Stephen Curtis Chapman. Are you playing that song, Boomer? Are you really?
Man. Get the tissue.
Oh, my gosh. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
The weight of the world on my shoulders. It's been a long day and there's still work to do. She's pulling at me saying, Dad, I need.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Wrapping up some time here with Christian recording artist, singer-songwriter Stephen Curtis Chapman. Hey, Stephen, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a blessing to have you on here. You've been a part of my family's life for so many years, and just a joy to be able to share some time and hear your story. So thank you for that.
You're welcome, Phil. Thank you, buddy.
Well, listen, you ain't sitting still. That's not meant to be a pun, but you ain't sitting still because you've got a new album out. I mean, you're still recording. Everything's still fresh. I mean, apparently you've still got a few songs left in you, but you just came out with a new album here in the last few months, and it's called Still. By the way, the cover song, the title song is already on my playlist, but talk to us about the new album. You got a tour coming up. I know you're playing in Montgomery, Alabama on March 30th.
That's right. Yes,
so,
sir.
So give us a scoop.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I honestly wasn't sure. Maybe a year or 2 years ago, if you'd asked me, I probably would have said, I'm not sure if I'll make another album again. I know I'll continue to, you know, it's hard to imagine me ever coming to a point where I, you know, put down the pen, hang up the guitar and say, yeah, I probably won't write any more songs. But interestingly enough, there are artists that I have heard about and read even recently about Billy Joel, who came to a point in his career where he said, I'm not going to write any more new music. I'm done. You know, the process of that, the intensity of that, that was something I did when I was young and I had all these things I wanted to say. And I think honestly, knowing the journey that you go through when you write new songs, when you have a career that you've been blessed with, like I have of, you know, 35 years of music, it's inevitable that people are going to, you're going to play a new song. And they're going to say, you know, that's great, but gosh, there's never going to be another song like fill in the blank, Great Adventure, Cinderella, I Will Be Here, Dive, you know, and there's never, man, your best album of all the albums is, you know, Signs of Life or More to This Life. I mean, they're going to pinpoint one and it's a great compliment, but it's also really hard on one level, because, you know, the insecure artist in you says, well, maybe they don't really care to hear any more new songs. Maybe, you know, and I write them for myself, but I also write these songs to have a conversation with people to say, man, here's what's happening in my life right now. And here's what God's shown me, or here's where I've blown it, or here's where I feel like maybe I got a little wisdom on this, something I learned, maybe the hard way, maybe on the mountaintop or the valley. And when you feel like maybe people are going to go, you know, nah, thank you, but just go ahead and play me the old songs.
Play the whole stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of like, okay. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy, the hoops that you have to emotionally, mentally, you know, psychologically jump through to even get to a place spiritually, even just to go, do I need to write these songs and invest the time and energy, because I really want to, but does anybody really care or listening? Finally, about a year ago, I just pushed all those voices out of my head and said, you know what? Global pandemic, loss of friends and family members, and loss of normalcy and loss of, you know, security. Yeah. I mean, my job went away for a while. There was no touring. Nobody ever knew if we ever would tour again. All those things that we all have gone through these last few years. There were a lot of songs started to kind of stir up in me. And out of that, I just sat down and started to write these songs and said, you know what? I think I've got some things that God's given me to say, some conversations that I would love to have with people. And I'm not going to worry as much about how many, or are they going to, you know, do they care? Do they want to hear the old songs? I feel like I need to do this and share this music. And as I did, I felt like sort of the wind came in my sails, and I started writing a lot of music. And this album and this whole theme of Still kind of came to the surface, which I think not only for me, I wanted to say, I still want to sing these songs. I still have things to say, because God's word never stops working on us and through us and in our world, and our world's never needed it more. So I still want to sing about it, but also, you know, to be able to say, God is still faithful. God is still good. That's what sustained us and our family. And that's the reason why I still want to make music about it. So,
well, brother, I've heard parts of it already, and you still got it, man. God's gift is still actively apparent in your life, and so thank you for that. And that being said, tour starts in March. I know that within the first month, you're already playing in Alabama and Montgomery. Like I said a moment ago, we're glad of that. But in the meantime, just know this: you've touched a lot of lives in a lot of different ways, not just in music. And I think the kingdom is broader because of it. But Stephen Curtis Chapman, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an honor to have you on.
Phil, thank you, brother. Bless you, my friend.
All right, thanks. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.